Good evening. I know I'm not the preacher, but nonetheless, I would like to welcome all the visitors, all the guests. And at the end of the day, we hope that whatever we say tonight, that it glorifies God, that we preach His word, and that we all go home and be edified. First, I'd like to thank the elders for this opportunity to preach tonight, as well as all the encouragement I received from each and every one of y'all as I prepared my sermon tonight. I'd also like to thank and commend y'all for the encouragement and help the past 22 years of my life and the major impact that this church family has on me. I know this morning Jacob talked about the investment that y'all put into the college kids, the kids here. And I do want to say that that investment is not in vain, that y'all continue to help people, y'all set kids up for the future, and that at the end of the day, wherever those kids end up, I know they are godly people and that they just try and spread the word. I know that I would not be the person I am today without this church. I just cannot express the love I have for each and every one of y'all. And as many of y'all know, I get this opportunity because I did graduate this semester. But don't worry too much, I will still be here in the spring, so y'all don't get rid of me yet. When Ronnie asked me to preach, I immediately said yes. I thought it would be a great opportunity to try and portray some thoughts I've been having. And I soon realized that the hardest part about preaching is actually picking the sermon topic that you want to talk about. So after talking to various friends and family and bouncing ideas off of them, I realized that I still had no clue on what I wanted to preach on. Ultimately, I decided that if I have one opportunity to preach at this church, that I want to preach a message of encouragement and a message that hopefully can be very applicable in your own life. Throughout my life, I have often seen the misconception that Christians always have their life together, that Christians shouldn't feel sad, that they shouldn't feel depressed or distraught, that Christians should simply be unfazed by what goes on in the world because we have a better hope. However, when you look around the world and you see everything that happens in it, this lifestyle becomes increasingly difficult to maintain. I think we're in times of Isaiah 5, verse 20, where it says, "Evil is called good and good is called evil." It can be easy to feel like we are alone in the fight for God and that even we are losing the battle against sin. When you look out, you just see evil everywhere. So tonight, I want to look at what we think is one of the strongest men in the Bible, someone who performed many mighty acts in the name of God, yet still struggled with feeling alone in a world of evil, a man who one night had one of the highest highs you could probably have as a prophet, but the very next morning, he was asking God to take his own life because he felt so depressed. I'm sure many of you know where I'm going and who I'm talking about. So if you'd like to follow along, we'll be in the beginning in 1 Kings 19 and talking about the story of Elijah. To get a better understanding of the story and what was going on in this situation, I think it is extremely important to understand what is happening in Israel at that time. Ahab was the king of Israel, and chapter 16 says, "Now Ahab did more to provoke the Lord, the God of Israel, to anger than all the kings of Israel who were before him. And as bad as that makes him sound, his wife Jezebel might have been even worse than him. Jezebel had introduced the idol Baal into the households of Israel, and the false god had seemingly taken the place of God, the true God, in many of the households. In the previous chapters leading up to this, we had seen Jezebel kill hundreds, if not thousands, of prophets of God, all while reinstating false prophets of Baal. However, we see Elijah try and combat this with an amazing display of God's greatness on Mount Carmel. We see Elijah, through God, defeat almost 1,000 false prophets, and you would seemingly think this is the end. Baal was proven false, God is proven true. It sounds great. But beginning in chapter 19, we read, "Ahab told Jezebel all that Elijah had done and how he had killed all the prophets with the sword. Then Jezebel sent a messenger to Elijah saying, 'So may the gods do to me, and more so also, if I do not make your life as the life of one of them by this time tomorrow.' Then he was afraid, and he arose, and he ran for his life, and came to Beersheba, which belongs to Judah, and left his servant there. But he himself went a day's journey into the wilderness, and came and sat down under a broom tree. And he asked that he might die, saying, 'It is enough now, O Lord, take away my life, for I am no better than my fathers.' And he lay down, and he slept under a broom tree, and behold, an angel touched him and said, 'Arise and eat.' And he looked, and behold, there was at his head a cake baked with hot stones and a jar of water. And he ate and drank and lay down again. An angel of the Lord came again a second time and touched him and said, 'Arise and eat, for the journey is too great for you.' And he arose and ate and drank and went in the strength of that food 40 days, 40 nights to Horeb, the mount of God." Verse 9, there he came to a cave and lodged in it. And behold, the word of the Lord came to him and said to him, what are you doing here, Elijah? And he said, I've been very jealous for the Lord, the God of hosts, for the people of Israel forsaken your covenant, thrown down your altars and killed your prophets with the sword. And I, even I alone, only am left. And they seek my life to take it away. And he said, go out and stand on the mount before the Lord. And behold, the Lord passed by, and a great and strong wind tore the mountains, and broke in pieces the rocks before the Lord. But the Lord was not in the wind. And after the wind, an earthquake. But the Lord was not in the earthquake. And after the earthquake, a fire. But the Lord was not in the fire. And after the fire, the sound of a low whisper. And when Elijah heard it, he wrapped his face in his cloak, and went out and stood at the entrance of the cave. And behold, there came a voice to him and said, what are you doing here, Elijah? He said, I've been very jealous for the Lord, the God of hosts. For the people of Israel have forsaken your covenant, thrown down your altars, and killed your prophets with the sword. And I, even I only, am left, and they seek to my life to take it away. And the Lord said to him, go return on your way to the wilderness of Damascus. And when you arrive, you shall join Hazael, you shall anoint Hazael to be king over Syria. And Jehu, the son of Nishmi, you shall anoint to be king over Israel. And Elisha, the son of Shaphat, and Abel-Meloah, you shall anoint to the prophet in your place. And the one who escapes you from sword of Hazael shall Jehu put to death. And the one who escapes from the sword of Jehu shall Elisha put to death. Yet I will leave 7,000 in Israel, all the knees that have not bowed to Baal, and every mouth that has not kissed him. It's a pretty dark story if you think about it. Someone who just feels so alone in the world that he thinks there's no hope, that he's asking God to take his life. And that's what I want to draw your attention to first, is the hopelessness that Elijah feels. How he feels so alone in his fight against evil that he asks God to take his own life. We see that it's very evident that Elijah thinks he's the only person left who fears and loves God. And to be honest, I think we can get in this mindset sometimes. The mindset that we are so alone in the world, there's evil everywhere. And even though deep down we do know there are other Christians out there, we know that there are people like us. But it's hard. There have been multiple shootings this month. Drug addiction is rampant, not to mention countless other problems. And looking around, you take a quick view at the world. It's just sad. It looks there's no good. And I know I've fallen into that trap. Maybe some of you have. And I truly believe that this is how Satan, the devil, wants us to look at the world. He wants us to look around. He wants us to see so much evil in the world that we can't help but feel alone. But that is not the way it is. No matter how we feel, we are never alone in our walk with God. Turning to Hebrews 12, verses 1 through 2, says, therefore, since we are surrounded by so great a cloud of witnesses, let us also lay aside every weight and sin which clings so closely, and let us run with endurance the race that is set before us, looking to Jesus, the founder and perfecter of our faith, who for the joy that was set before him endured the cross, despising the shame, and is seated at the right hand of the throne of God. So I'd like you to look into a little imagery here, and this is what I read, and when I read this passage, this is how I view it. I like to imagine I'm on the final stretch of a race, that I'm almost done and I can see the finish line. And you look over to the sides and there's millions of people. You might know some of them, you might not, but they're all cheering for you. People who I know and even people who I don't know. And I think this is one of the most important points we can remember as we walk with God, that no matter how alone we feel or how exhausted we may be, there are always people rooting for us, people who've already fought the fight, so that shows we are never truly alone. Imagine some of the people we read about knowing us by name. People like Peter and Job, Elijah, Moses, Paul, even Jesus. People who, like us, had to deal with an increasingly hostile world while standing up for God. And I think this image is just so beautiful. Just one of the biggest encouragements as we walk with God. Just to know that if those people can keep the faith, and despite all their hardships, then so can we. And you look at the prophets. And we talked about it in our Hebrews class this morning, they were men and women just like us. They went through the same temptations that we went through, but they still kept the faith. They lived in hostile times like we lived, and they kept the faith. They did not lose sight of what was at the end. God then responds to Elijah by not only letting Elijah know that he is with him, but there are thousands of people who have not laid a knee to Baal. And I would submit to you that this is why the church is so important and made for us. Without it, we'd feel hopeless. Imagine you are on your own in a spiritual journey with evil surrounding you and you have no one to turn to. It'd be extremely easy to feel alone, but thankfully we've been blessed with a community of like-minded people who, no matter what goes on in the world, let us know that we are living, that we are together and living for God. We have to keep in mind that we are all working together to reach the goal. Now, I'll allude to running again, but the hardest part of your run is right after you hit the first mile. The first mile is easy, but you hit the back mile, you might be running through the woods, there's not many people there, and it's easy to feel bad. So to try and combat this, while running, we would constantly pace each other and work together to win races. Now, many people view running as an individual sport, and it, for the most part it is, but we would constantly see that the teams that work together were the teams that would normally win. Much like running, I would say we are doing ourselves a great disservice if we are not constantly working and helping each other to be better and to ultimately reach heaven. Some of the lowest points of my life, much like Elijah, have come when I have not been around people who serve God, who love him. And I don't want to embarrass my dad by saying this, but when people would ask about his surgery and recovery, I consistently heard him say, "I don't know how I would have got through it without God and my church family." The community that we have as a church is so special, and we need to take every advantage of that. And if you want to take anything from this sermon, I would want it to be just the encouragement and knowledge that no matter what the world or Satan wants us to believe, that we are not alone in this fight for God. My second point is that no matter how bad we feel about things in the world, that God is protecting us and God has not abandoned us. It's very easy to look around and you hear questions about God. I commonly hear questions like, "How does God let this happen? Why is there so much evil? Why does God not do anything?" And sometimes it can be easy to think about the trap of, where is God in all this? And to be honest, I think the best way to answer these questions is to see how God answers them when people ask him. A great place to turn to see this is Job, where we see how God answers these questions. It is an important precursor to this topic to say that nothing bad that happened to Job was caused by God. God does not cause pain in our life. God does not send trials. We even see that in the New Testament. But instead, we see Satan continually try and get Job to sin. But the evil that Job goes through is not caused by God. Now, after Job goes through losing everything he has in a short period of time, we see his friends, his wife, try and get him to turn on God in question. But if you'll turn to chapter Job 38, we'll be reading verses 4 through 12. It says, "Where were you when I laid the foundation of the earth? Tell me if you have understanding. Who determined its measurement? Surely you know. Or who stretched the line upon it? Or in what were its bases sunk? Or who laid its cornerstone? When the morning stars sang together and all the sons of God shouted for joy? Or who shut in the sea with the doors when it burst from the womb? When I made clouds its garment and thick darkness in its swaddling band, and prescribed limits for it and set bars, and said, 'Thus shall you come and no farther, and here shall your proud waves be stayed.'" We get to see how much of a role God played in creation, and it shows that he still plays a role today. I think I would compare this to what we read in Isaiah 55, verses 8 and 9, where it says, "For my thoughts are not your thoughts, neither are my ways your ways, declares the Lord. For as the heavens are higher than the earth, so are my ways higher than your ways, and my thoughts higher than your thoughts." It is important for us to remember that God sees the full picture. Despite what we think we see, that's not the full picture. Even if there are times that we think God has abandoned us or we cannot understand what we are doing, we have to understand that not understanding God does not equal that God is not active in the world. Not understanding what is happening does not mean that God is inactive. If you'll turn to Habakkuk 1, verses 1 through 6, we see Habakkuk talking to God and he's crying for help. "O Lord, how long shall I cry for help and how will you not hear? Or cry to you violence and you will not save? Why do you make me see iniquity? And why do you idly look at wrong? Destruction and violence are before me. Strife and contention arise. So the law is paralyzed and justice never goes forth. For the wicked surrounds the righteous, so justice goes forth perverted. Look among the nations and see. Wonder and astounded, for I am doing a work in your days that you would not believe me if told." Does that not sound like today? That there is wickedness in the world? That there's justice. Justice seems to be not happening. And what does God say when he's asked? He says, "Look around and see. If I'm doing a work in your days that you would not believe. And I still believe God is doing that today in these days. So we see how God responds to Elijah when Elijah feels alone. We see him send an angel for help and then later showing Elijah that he is very much with him when we go through the wind. I think it also is important to point out that God never reprimands Elijah for feeling this way or tells him that he's in the wrong. Instead, we see God comfort Elijah, show him that he is still there and to strengthen him for the journey ahead. Furthermore, we see that God has a definite plan for how to take care of his great evil. At the end of 1 Kings 19, we see where God tells Elijah to appoint kings that are going to take out Baal once and for all in Israel. So for our final point is that we can make a difference. That despite all the evil in the world, despite overwhelming odds, it may seem like that if we persevere and keep holding on to God, then we can bring more people to God. So we can see Elijah continuing to serve God and make a difference in Israel, even after seeing the state of the country and people calling for his life. Elijah continued to stand up for his faith and denounce the evil works of Ahab and Jezebel. I think one reason Elijah felt so discouraged was that it seemed like his work was in vain, and it did not have an effect on the people's heart in Israel. Despite God's showing on Mount Carmel, we do not see immediate changes in Israel at all, and in fact, it just seems it gets worse after that. However, we continue to see that Elijah continually touches the heart of the people he interacts with on a daily basis with how he lives his life. We can compare this to 1 Kings 19, verses 11 and 12, where God passes through the mountain. And each time God passes, you see a strong wind, you see an earthquake, you see fire, and you say, surely God is in there. I think sometimes we can get into this mindset that unless we're doing great works for God or talking to hundreds of people at a time, then we are not making a difference. But if you read closely, what does it say? That God was in the wind. Just the tiny wind, but God was in it. And by no means am I trying to diminish the works of these great works or trying to talk to hundreds of people at a time. And they are an absolute necessity to grow the kingdom of God. And they do have an important place. But sometimes the biggest difference that we can make in the world is by how we live our lives. I believe that we can reach as many people by showing genuine kindness and God's love and forgiveness, qualities that are not found far, few and far between these days. These activities can spark so much conversation about why we live our life and show that they are normally the first stepping stones that we have to use to talk to people. How hard would it be to convert or talk to someone about God when we don't show the love of God in our life every day? If we're asking them to do something, if we're not living for God, if we're not showing the kindness of God, why would they listen to us? You can see how much God values these activities, even small activities, in verses like Matthew 5:40 and Matthew 10:42. I'll just read Matthew 5:40 to save time, but it says that, and if anyone would sue you and take your tunic, let him have your cloak as well. And if anyone forces you to give 1 mile, go with him 2 miles. Give to the one who begs from you, and do not refuse the one who would borrow from you. Now, while that's talking about retaliation, I think the point still stands that God wants us to show kindness. God wants us not to, we talked about it this morning with Jacob, that you don't expect anything in return from helping. We had the scripture reading of 1 Timothy 4, and I think that is a good example of any is how we should live. That despite where we are in our life, we can set the tone for people around us and become a godly example for others. The idea that we live with our hope set on a living hope, one who will never let us down. And then we see when it says, do not despise, get despised for your youth, we see all those characteristics deal with more with how we live our own life and setting an example where people will look at us and know we are different. When you look at the Philippian jailer, we see that he's convicted by how Paul and lived his life when he was in jail. When he got jailed, what does he do? He sings, and then you see the earthquake come. And what happens? He stays in jail. He gets the other jailers to do it. He tells the Philippian jailer not to die. And he said, and the Philippian jailer sees that he's different. You think most people, if they get a free exit out of jail, they would take it. But what does he do? He shows that he has integrity, and by that, we see how he can convert the Philippian jailer. Looking back at Elijah and Elisha, we constantly see them make a difference in common people's lives. We see stories of Elisha helping a widow raise money for her debtor, or make an axe head float into water for a man to recover it. And you think it could have been really easy for them to say that this is not important. I have more important stuff to do. Elijah could go talk to King Ahab anytime. But what do? They go out of their way in order to help people, those who need it most, no matter how convenient it might have been for them. And for this, I think it's important that when we do talk to people and they reject us, that they are not rejecting us, that they're rejecting God. I think it can be very easy to talk to someone and you get discouraged when you talk to them. You're like, how can you do this? But they're not rejecting us. I think back to 1 Samuel 8, right after Israel decided that they want a king. Samuel's distraught. He says, God, how can they reject us? And what does God say? He said, they're not rejecting you. They're rejecting me. And I think when people choose evil, when they reject us, that we need to remember that they're rejecting God. And we just keep trying and we keep laying the seed. And at the end of the day, maybe it will work, but maybe it won't. But we just have to keep trying. So as we bring this lesson to a close, I would encourage each and every one of you to look into the different aspects of your life and see how that God provides. Maybe you never feel alone in this world, or maybe you never feel that God has abandoned you. But that's great. That means you can help others who might feel this way. Or maybe you do constantly feel down by the events in the world. And I would urge you to constantly turn to God, the community, and this church that God has set in place for us. No matter what area we might be in, there are ways that we can help and lean on each other like God intended. There's plenty of work in the kingdom for all of us to do. And despite what Satan wants you to believe, it does make a difference in the world. Everything that we do has a negative or positive impact. So tonight, maybe you don't yet have the hope that God offers and are ready to make a change to receive that hope. Maybe you look around the world and think, there has to be something more than this. Well, I would love to be the first to tell you that there is something more than this, that you can live for a higher calling for God. Or maybe you've gotten lost in the care